Chomp, chomp. I'm in love now. welcome everyone to Double O Deep Dive Pop Culture Pros, home for everything James Bond 007. Let's crank up that Shirley Bassey for like the 30 seconds we get her. Where are we going, Shirley? All right. Thank you for joining us. Whether you are joining us live on the Facebook feed, whether you're joining us live on YouTube, whether you are joining us on Twitter, wherever you get your live feeds, thank you for joining us. If you're listening to the audio podcast, you're watching this not live, but Memorex. It's a joke I make for six people and they're all over 40. Thank you for listening. We do appreciate it. This is the listeners are why we are here. I'm your host, Dr. Space Orgy himself, Jason Vyshenik. How's it going, guys? Good to see you guys. We got a full house this week.
Yay.
Sure do.
We got a full house, but before we're gonna save introductions for our guests for last. But with me, as always, the Bond girl in residence, Dr. Anita Moorhead herself.
Yeah, right. Could have been worse. Could have been worse.
I could have been Dr. Goodhead, right?
Could have been that.
You know what? This is
at least mine's funny. Show. Mine's a proper pun. Mine's a proper pun. First name, last name, like full on.
Yeah, yours isn't just like she gives good head, so let's just call her Dr. Goodhead. You know?
Yeah, Holly.
Oh, but joining us after a 3-week hiatus, he's been dodging Roger Moore like I try to dodge this movie, you know. but he's back. He is doing his unhassling the Moore franchise this week by joining us for Moonraker. E Branch, Ed Camus, good to see you. How are you, my friend?
What's up? It's so good to be back. My Mondays are fulfilled again.
How are you feeling? Are you feeling invincible, or like you could be hurt, or are you feeling opposite?
I'll let you know at the end of the show. I'm still right. Deciding on that. I don't know. It's Mondays. I don't know. Well, I'll let you know. I'll think about it.
Yeah, think it over. Let us know before the show ends how you're feeling. And speaking of feeling, I am feeling the pleasure of introducing my good friend and our special guest, John Rice, who is the, I've asked him on the show specifically, he is the Moonraker apologist to my Moonraker hater. We've been having these conversations back and forth about this movie in particular for quite some time. So John, thank you so much for joining us.
Oh, no. Thank you for inviting me to the space orgy. I wore my bathing suit. Is that okay?
Oh, yeah, that's more than okay. That's fine. That's how we roll here in Vyshenik's Space Orgy Kingdom. I don't even know what the, what would my Moonraker be called? I don't even know.
It's a terrible theme park that you just named, though.
It's a working title.
Like, we're working on it, all right? It doesn't all flow off the tongue.
Placeholder.
But yeah, I'm so happy that we're all here. So happy that we're going to be discussing Moonraker. We're gonna get down into it, right? This is the nitty gritty of the Roger Moore series. But before we do that, every time we have someone new to the show, we just like to sort of take their Bond temperature. So, Rice, John, I'd like to know, like, so what's your history with Bond? Who's your favorite Bond? Like, what's your favorite Bond movie? That way, so we know exactly, because I think everyone comes to this franchise for something different, and so it's our way of figuring out, you know, where you're coming from.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. I grew up, as I feel like, you know, a lot of us on the podcast did, in the GoldenEye 64 era. New interest was like occurring in Bond after years of kind of a lull, like the Timothy Dalton, like, you know, nosedive, as I call it, you know, nothing really happening down there. And then like Brosnan back. But my love, you know, despite having watched a lot of movies or, you know, of Bond over these, like, you know, multiple decades of being alive, my love of Bond always goes back to my first true love, my first Bond, Roger Moore. my favorite Bond film is Live and Let Die. It was kind of one of the first I'd ever seen. But yeah. I like to watch, you know, widely. You know, I, you know, have like a good knowledge, not just of like Bond over the decades, but also like the spy genre in general as it exists during its origin in the 60s and its continuation to the 70s. For me, I enjoy that transitional period in which more, you know, kind of personifies of the spy genre kind of like elongating out of its origin where everything was like super serious and mysterious and things were kind of being defined for the first time into the point where people are kind of a little bit tired of how ridiculous the Cold War is. Hmm. So for me, I turn to Bond for that sort of like feeling of, you know, ridiculousness of like, you know, this can't really be happening and yet we're watching it because we can't turn away. That's how like good it is. So for me, you know, Moore is the quintessential Bond for me because he represents, you know, kind of a postmodern sense of Bond where Bond is aware of himself. And I feel Moonraker is a good example of talking about, you know, how Moore embodies that kind of postmodern spirit of, you know, the spy genre kind of opening itself up to self-parody and awareness of its own genre. So yeah, really excited to talk about Moonraker. And, you know, like all of the assassination attempts in this movie to kill Roger Moore's Bond, Jason's attempt to assassinate Roger Moore will be, you know, prove clumsy, just as Bax does in this movie.
Ooh, all right, Agent 006.7. I can't see it. 006.95.
695. You know,
Dr. Space Orgy has got his laser eyes focused on you.
we got a comment in here, actually, John, for you that mentioning, and we know how popular it is on this show, that N64 is the greatest. It's the greatest of all time.
Oh, yes, GoldenEye is the best N64 game of all time. Thank you for that, Danny, because 100% true.
Nice.
I can never let this go when that game is brought up without pointing out that we found out on this show that the way Ginny and her siblings would like decide logistically how sibling rivalry played out was in that game.
You could solve all solutions and problems, and I think that would equate well to any world problem, any major political issue. I think
exactly. You have like one of those like landmine fights or something. You throw mines. It's someone to walk into the room.
Seamless. It's very flawless. You know, simple.
I wish we could just solve all world wars like that. Like let's get Putin and everyone he's trying to take over. Let's sit him down. Let him play some N64. And if he loses, that's it. And he can't. He cannot play as Oddjob because that's not fair.
No,
it's cheating. It's true.
Take away weapons. Just do a slap fight. A slap fight. You can just do hands. Not a punch. It's a slap.
It's like a judo chop.
Yeah, it's like a judo chop.
Yep.
All right, so let's get into some Moonraker, guys. Let's get into the cold open. All right, so we got two parts to this cold open. The beginning is we have a shot of a plane with the Moonraker jet or shuttlecraft on top of it, and there are two like guys who are in the Moonraker somehow. We don't know how they got there. And they take the Moonraker over and they destroy the plane and they fly off with the Moonraker. And that sets up the conflict. That sets up the whole arc of the story. And then we get M going, where's James? Is he back from his trip in Africa? And Moneypenny's like, well, he's just getting a leg up. And then if they like, you know, Roger, like, and John, I don't know if you've listened to any of our Roger Moore ones. I've been giving it to the editor because there's some slick puns in the editing.
Yep.
And it cuts right to like Moore with his hand on a stewardess and touching her leg, but then she turns on him and she pulls a gun and the pilot comes out and he's obviously an enemy agent, and they a whole thing ensues and he throws the guy out of the plane, and then Jaws comes out of nowhere and throws Bond out of the plane.
Sure
and
does. After him. He sure does.
And then there is, I will grant you, some super cool stunts and actions.
Yeah.
I think the action sequence of Bond falling and having to get the parachute and then the tension of him trying to hook it on, like, that was awesome. And then Jaws falls into a circus and doesn't die because he's the fucking juggernaut, and that's our cold open. Did I miss anything?
I'd like to point out that there is a world record for falling out of a plane without a parachute, and that Jaws could have been under the limit of that.
But he walks away, nary a bone broken.
We don't know that. There could have been time that elapsed. You know, he could have broken other people's bones by landing on them.
Breaking the fall.
This is a documentary.
All right. I will look, duly noted. I will be fair. Duly noted. It's possible, but I'm going to say it's not probable.
I mean, that describes all of the Bond movies ever, so.
So what do we think of this cold open? Like, I'll save my comments for last. Who wants to jump
in? I thought that was scary. I thought that was like alarming. And then also cuz I'm watching this in HD, I'm like, you can't see Roger Moore's face on the stunt double. And I was like, good editing, because it's always the back of his head and it's pretty seamless. And I'm like, looking for it. I'm like, where's the stunt double? I'm like, no, it looks great. And I was alarmed because that's a fear of falling, no parachute, and then you having to get to someone else. It was very scary. I was like, this is actually pretty cool to me. And that was it.
Jenny, you've thought about this often?
Like a dream, like a bad dream.
Oh, you know? Okay. This is just like a thing you think about. Like, hey, imagine one day I'm falling out of this plane and a parachute. I gotta find somebody and get theirs.
In all fairness, that would be terrifying.
It would be.
Yeah.
But would it be as terrifying as Jaws literally coming out of nowhere? Like, where was Jaws during his whole flight? Was he a co-pilot? Was he taking a dump? Was he making a sandwich or something? Was he hiding in a closet? Like, what the hell was he doing that Bond never saw him?
Exactly. He's up in the cockpit saying, like, hey, don't call me Shirley.
There's no music for him either. He just shows up.
Yes, he just pops his head out. I'm like, holy shit. Where did he come from? And why didn't Bond know he was on this plane? And why does M have why does M have the bat phone?
It's the Bond phone, right?
I guess. I mean, unless Commissioner Gordon lent it to him or something. It's kind of like, hey, just in case you need to call Bond when he's in Africa, when Jaws is on the plane, you should use this.
I am. If it were anyone else but Drax, it were Goldfinger, Goldeneye, or Doctor, whatever. Like I want him to have a Chief O'Hara now, is what I'm saying.
Yes, exactly.
I have a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions about the cold open, which I'm just going to, just because you asked the question of where was Jaws, right? I have other questions. Why is Bond on this plane of three people trying to kill him? What fucking mission is he in the middle of? Like,
he got done
I don't
African
know.
Job. He got done the African
okay,
job.
Okay, and then why is he on this plane? Like, I remembered back to Quantum of Solace when Tom pointed out very, like, astutely, like, the cold open of that movie just doesn't make sense. It's just, yeah, it's cool action, but what the fuck's going on? I don't know. And that's how I felt about this. Like, I have so many questions about what's going on, and I don't get any answers. But, I mean, that parachute stuff was cool. Like, but,
hold on a second. About the cold open of Quantum of Solace, wasn't the cold opening him just picking up, like, chasing down who had killed Vesper?
Yeah.
Yes, but it requires the viewer. So it's not as bad. So this is worse than Quantum of Solace because it references nothing. It references something the audience could not have any idea of. But Tom's point was
defending Quantum of Solace. This is happening.
Tom's point was that the audience has to have just seen the last movie and remember who this throwaway character is, who we only really meet at the end, who's not a big part of Casino Royale. And even then, it's you only kind of see who that guy is when he gets him in at the end. So not that Quantum of Solace's cold open made no sense. It was just kind of like a lot of cool action with little story filling in was Tom's point.
Well, I'm just, my thing about it is just that it is a sequel because the Craig era was the only one that actually has like actual real continuity. So I would give Quantum of Solace a pass on not making any sense because I just thought it was like, hey, you just kind of picked up where you left off. And I agree, it requires the viewer to do it, but doesn't every sequel kind of require you to see the previous movie?
And I wasn't saying that it didn't make sense. I was just saying that what Tom had said, like Tom made that good point that I thought was a good one for Quantum of Solace, that there's a lot of action with little of the story filling in. Of course, it's also because there's no script to that movie because of the writer's strike.
Well, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, but that's how this felt to me is all I'm saying. It's like there's stuff going on, but as an audience member, I'm never going to know what it is. John, I'm sorry. I know you wanted to say something.
You know, you're making some good points here. You've asked a good question. I'm going to ask you a question in return. You say like, hey, what's the story here? I want to posit, does it matter? You know, does it matter that we do not have a story to lead into like the cold opening of this Bond movie? Because I'm get all the things that we want from a Bond movie within these like 2 or 3 minutes. We get an explosion. We get a fight scene. You know, we get a sex pun. You know, we get all the things that we want from James Bond. But do we actually need narrative, in this moment or in like the entire film even?
Normally I would say no, but I need it to make sense. And the only way this cold open makes sense is if James Bond is the stupidest spy in the world who, once he gets around anything that makes his dick hard, completely loses all sense of logic. Because it's the only other way, that's the only way I could see him getting on that plane.
I will say in this film, though, that they do try that later on when the random women just start lining up out of nowhere, and it looks like an orgy gets proposed like about 5 times in this movie. That was one of them.
This movie is about trying to get a eugenic space orgy. That's it.
Well, maybe he was in an orgy in Africa, and that's what was happening. That Jaws was in.
But then I need to know that because that's not shit that I'm expecting to happen. Like, in the beginning of Goldfinger, right? I don't need to know the narrative of James Bond coming out in the wetsuit, taking it off, and he's in the tuxedo, and then he kills someone, and then he goes to his room. I don't need to know that because that all makes sense. That's spy stuff going on. If this like plane was like the Africa orgy continued, I need something. I need to know because, again, it doesn't even seem like he's in the middle of a mission.
I think you've kind of caught yourself in a double standard here, Jason. Like, if that stuff with Sean Connery can, not need explanation, why does this need explanation?
Because that makes intrinsic sense and this doesn't.
Does it? I mean, more sense than, like, than this? Like, they're both kind of spy situations.
Yes, but one shows me a good spy doing good spy stuff, and the other shows me a guy who got lured to a trap, a very obvious trap on a plane.
I can agree with you on that. I don't need to know everything about his mission. We know that he's coming back from a mission in Africa, right? So that's fine. Why is he surrounded by a bunch of people that are trying to kill him? Jason, and I can agree with you. Like, I want to know a little. If you're going to set that up, you got to give me a little bit more about his mission.
Especially if Jaws.
I just want to know where the fuck Jaws was the whole time. Because it's not like he's like a small guy. He had to be on. He had to be seen at some point. He's hiding in a fuel tank, maybe.
But anyway, I am going to give 100% two things so far. None of my problems with this movie is Roger Moore. I actually think he is rather charming in this movie. He is. I think he is.
I can't argue with you because you know how much I hate Roger Moore.
But I know. Like, I know.
Like with a passion, but I actually have to say that he didn't bother me in this movie. Maybe it's because I went into it knowing what. This is what I was expecting.
Yeah.
So it's fine. Like, whatever. John, I went into a whole thing about why I hate Roger Moore when I was, like, introduced to Bond and stuff. And it just goes, like...
I'm glad I missed like, you, I would have cried.
No, I know. I don't want to make you cry. I'm trying to... Listen, if he's your favorite, great. But, like, I don't know. I'm like, who is this guy? Why? What is he doing here? Get lost. Like,
you know what I said, though? I did say, I'm like, because he's very condescending, Bond, and I'm not into that. And I'm like, I need you to be a little bit, I don't know, like... It's so clear and out there. And then I go, but I do like that when he gets wet, he looks great. Him and Pierce Brosnan look great, like soaking wet after a mission, I think. And then, and what else? And he also has like, I don't know, is he getting kind of like screwed over a lot where he's like easily susceptible to like women and, or they think he is in this? I don't know. That's his Bond to me, where he's always just like foil it to women. And the women are like, haha, and they always have a gun on him. And I'm like, did you know?
I mean, that's one of his flaws, right? That's just the character.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, I think more.
Sex pun. Come here.
You got me.
I think it's more often during the Roger Moore one.
I like that.
It's usually
like
a little bit extra. Or Jason, as Rick called him, Roger Whore.
Roger Whore!
When we were on our group text.
He is the randiest Bond. He has...
Oh, for sure.
He has more sex than any other Bond. Like, this guy's doing, like, 3 to 4 women a movie.
Yeah. And this, it could have been, like, 30, 40, 50.
It could have
been. Could have been. Could have been.
No, he could have been easily. He did not leave the space orgy without getting it wet. You know that for a fact.
Of course.
I'm just trying to be really crude now. I want to see how crude I could push it before someone says, dude, what are you doing?
Space orgy. The space orgy has opened the floodgates for this.
It has. It really has. All right. So before we get into the opening credits, which I want to talk about, as we uncovered, John, I don't know if I told you this, but we uncovered, I think Ed found this out halfway through our run, that these songs are specifically written for the movie, the movies. And they like in the Spectre, the movie Spectre, they would not use the Radiohead song of the same name because it wasn't written specifically for the movie. So we now play a game of how the hell is this song connected to the movie? So where I literally just read it out, and when someone has an idea, just stop me. Sometimes it's really easy, sometimes it's Moonraker. So, where are you? Why do you hide? Where is that moonlight trail that leads to your side? Just like the Moonraker goes in search of his dream of gold, I search for love, for someone to have and hold. I've seen your smile in 1,000 dreams, felt your touch, and it always seems you love me, you love me. I mean, I could go on, but I mean,
I have nothing. I got nothing.
Yeah, I can explain Jaws's hiding area in the plane better than I can explain that.
Oh, I thought you were gonna say I can explain this from Jaws's point of view, and I was like, go on,
Jenny. You want to know something? I agree with you. No, this is from Jaws's point of view.
Okay, let's run with it.
That's it. No, that's it. I'm good.
So, all right, there you go. We Jaws's got
point of view.
Yes. We got it. This is about Jaws and his trek to the Moonraker, which brings him love. I get it now. Thank you, Ed.
Wow, Jenny, great job. Fantastic.
Well, Jenny actually made the last week The Spy Who Loved Me make complete sense to me, because she goes, well, maybe this is James Bond singing to the other woman. And I'm like, yeah. Wow!
But I thought, because she is a spy, and you always think, oh, maybe it's the lady singing about this spy. And I was like, no. I was like, what if?
But now we got Jaws.
No, it's just a Jaws point.
Look, I love it. I love it. I kind of want to see him singing it now, like, rah, rah, rah. Like, I don't know how he would.
He would. He'd do it. I know he would.
Like this dude in Clark singing Berserker?
Yes!
Like, singing like that?
Now all I want to see is Richard Kiel sing Berserker.
Yes, that's what we need.
My love for you is like a truck berserker. I've seen Clerks way too many times. All right, so what did we think of the song Moonraker? Like, so I know, all right, so we're having a little fun with it, but like, as a Bond song, what do we think? John, we haven't started with you yet, and I don't want people to think that I'm putting you last because you're my nemesis on this episode. So, what do you think of the song?
Well, honestly, you know, I understand why, like, we think it's nonsensical. Like, most songs are, to be fair. But it's like, you know, as we know, or as, you know, we may know, Shirley Bassey is the only person to perform more than one Bond song. So to have her do, this is, I believe, is 4. Hold on, I have my notes here. Goldfinger, Diamonds Are Forever, and Moonraker. Sorry, miscounted.
Oh, Diamonds Are Forever, you're right. Crap, I forgot.
to hear her voice instantly kind of invokes the feeling of Bond, which is a great thing for this song, you know, because, you know, it's not as like a literal interpretation or has like the strongest connection to maybe the plot itself. I actually kind of like the idea of it being maybe a point of view kind of style song, whether that is Jaws or maybe even in Drax, because I feel it invokes like, kind of an aspiration of the old ideas of like the space race from the 60s, you know, that we are kind of like launching ourselves into space to find something. And, you know, this song kind of like, you know, trails off on kind of like, you know, maybe what that is, you know, whatever. But like, there are worse Bond songs. So for me, like, you know, the song kind of like, you know, the glove fits the hand.
Okay.
Okay. I can.
All right.
I can still sound with that.
Yeah. Ginny?
Oh, I just, my only thing is that me and my sister would, we watch the marathons of Bond movies. And because it's Shirley Bassey and because it's a little similar to Goldfinger, we always sing it like Moonraker. Yeah. And then we don't care to finish the verse. So we go, he rakes moons with a rake. And I don't know why. That's all I got for you guys. That's it. That's a little insight into my world.
So hey, I always, fantastic, I was like, job with the song, yeah, this week.
You're welcome. Like, where's the part where they go Moonraker? Because it's not a big part of the song. That's it.
Judy, I think I'm gonna have you start going over the songs as well as the Bond girls from now on. You do a much better job than I do.
She's crushing it this week with the song. This is fantastic.
This is.
I watched this yesterday and I'm like, yeah, this song is blah, whatever. But now it's totally different. I've seen it in a totally different light.
Wouldn't it be a little better if Shirley Bassey was singing it like that?
It absolutely would. I would love it. If everything Shirley Bassey sang was just to the Goldfinger thing. Diamonds are forever.
Moonraker. Why, where is it? I want a hook. I want that hook. I want like a Moonraker.
Oh, awesome. Ed, what about you? What'd you think of this, the song?
Oh, no. I said while I was watching it, I thought it was just blah, and then I didn't really think anything of it, honestly, but now that I'm thinking of it, of Jaws singing it to like the unnamed blonde girl with the pigtails and like to the different melody of Goldfinger, that's it. The song's awesome now.
This imaginary version.
Yes, it's an imaginary version. And if I ever watch Moonraker again, which I wouldn't put money on, this is the song I'm going to have in my head.
There you go. Awesome. So I'm actually, look, I'm going to surprise everyone. I love this song. This is Shirley Bassey. This is a top, like, it's my least favorite of her three, but, like, they're all great. I mean, I love Shirley Bassey. I dig this song way more than I like the movie. Like, it's, I don't actually, as I've said before, like, I like to make fun of these songs when they make no sense to me, but I don't need them to tell me the story of the movie. No. I just think it's funny, like, because if you're saying, no, we can't have this song because it wasn't written for this movie, and you got songs like this where we're like, I don't know.
That pissed us all off so much when we found that out. It pissed us off.
But I think this is a top tier Bond song. I think it's the possibly my favorite part about this movie is this song.
That might be the case now for me.
Yeah.
I'm just glad you found something you liked.
I did.
It's true, actually.
Look, there are things about this movie that I think could, like, if expanded upon, could have been good. But I think this movie is just, it takes a turn that it just never comes back from. That's my, when Ginny and I were talking about this, Star Wars, this, none of that spit, like, all right, let's get into, before we get into it, anything like the credit scene, cause we got to talk about the credit scene before we can bust open. I found it kind of boring and wasn't really paying attention. It's a lot of shadow women and pictures of James Bond. Did I miss anything that you guys thought was,
looks like she's flying like a Superman pose, but it looks like she's planking.
Oh yeah, that was interesting.
Because the song is so short, the opening credits
are so short. It is so short.
It's one of the shortest Bond songs that I could think of. I was expecting it to be longer. Right. So we didn't get to like do a lot of like fun visual stuff the way that we normally get in the opening of a Bond, just because, like, you know, short song, like, they got to pack a lot into this movie. So, you know.
Yeah, fair enough. Ed, anything?
No, I thought it was kind of like one of the more prototypical, like, Bond, again, like what you would think a Bond opening would look like, just like image shadows of women just going through and stuff like that. And like, that's kind of what I would think of when you're thinking about like a Bond opening, just like a generic one. And that's kind of what I got here. And I had no problems with it. It was fine. it was kind of short, actually, now that I think about it. I didn't clock that either. No, I was looking at it here. I'm playing with my phone for a little bit. I'm looking up. I'm like, okay, here we go. And Jason, you have me so geared up to like really have the knives out for this movie. So I was just still waiting. I'm like, oh God, here we go. Let's go. We'll get into some more of that later. But.
All right. So now let's open the floodgates, guys. Let's talk about we'll start with Bond, Roger Moore's Bond here. And I'm gonna, John, I'm gonna ask you to start only because I know that you have the stronger feelings here. Like, and then I'm gonna end because I'm pretty sure it is. Ed, you're gonna be like, this is dumb. And Ginny's gonna be like, yeah, it was fun, but it was dumb. And you and I are gonna be like, you know, this is the hill I'm dying on. So, yes. So talk a little bit about like Roger Moore's James Bond and just the overall plot, like what worked, what didn't. And we'll go into like the villain and such like that. So don't worry about getting too much into like the villain's plot, but just overall like story stuff and that relates to Bond.
Absolutely. Okay, so. I believe, you know, this movie in particular kind of like presents kind of a pivot point for Roger Moore's Bond. You know, we start, you know, Roger Moore overall, like a really kind of like charismatic, you know, sort of like Bond, you know, he has this sort of like really, you know, kind of like clever wry feeling about him where, you know, he's always kind of ready with like, you know, a wry look and a little joke. You know, in this film, you start to see almost kind of like a slight tinge of world weariness from him in terms of like there is a familiarity about what he does. So like he can, like as Ginny was pointing out, be a little short and condescending with particularly female characters, which, you know, in hindsight, you know, slightly troubling, but also explainable of the long arc of Bond, you know, just based on the fact that like he's been doing this for so long that like, you know, he's just like, oh, we're gonna wind up sleeping together, fine, here's a fun. But you know, he still manages to make this really clever and stuff, and as the film goes on, stretches on, he starts to kind of loosen up and get along better with like, you know, the people that he's working with. But overall there is kind of a tension between him and especially Dr. Goodhead, because she is so like clever and so aware of his BS. And that can like led to some tension, which as they kind of work together through the story kind of gets resolved. Overall, he's just a really charming Bond still. Like no matter what, we can't really take that away from him. He has just like the tools, Roger Moore has the tools to make this Bond really work very well. Even in a movie that like, you know, may not be Roger Moore's best, because we know that Roger Moore, you know, is capable of making The Spy Who Loves Me, you know, is capable of making Live and Let Die. And, you know, this isn't those two films, of course. It's a very different sort of film. But he has the charm to carry this through. And that's why Roger Moore's films are still watchable.
That's very well put. Very, very well put. And actually, you know, I'm just going to follow you because I don't actually disagree too much with what you said about Roger Moore. I actually, as I said, I found him very charming in this movie. I found him super charming in The Spy Who Loved Me. I think my problem is not him. My problem is the movie itself. He's charming. The movie isn't. And I think that's because I think about why do I hate this movie, but really like The Man with the Golden Gun, which is also a ridiculous movie. But that movie is charming. I'm not charmed by this one. We're not fighting yet.
John. We'll talk about that, I think, a bit more as the podcast goes on, I'm sure, too.
Ed, I'm sorry, go for it.
I mentioned it before, like, as much as I really can't stand Roger Moore's Bond, he didn't bother me in this movie. And John, you made a lot of good points, honestly. Like, he is charming. I'm not going to say, like, he's not. But, I mean, Ginny and Jason know my favorite Bond is Daniel Craig, and so far second is I really like Timothy Dalton's Bond. So I like the more darker, serious, you know, like Bond. I mentioned in Dalton's two movies, he has no time for no one's bullshit. He's just kind of like, listen, yeah, whatever, let's go. I got a mission to do. Let's go kill some people and do what I got to do, right? Especially in License to Kill when he's just pissed off the whole movie. Yeah, he was fine in it. He is charming. He just seems like he is Austin Powers quite a bit. Yeah. Like, I kind of just get that vibe from him. Yeah, it's just one scene to the next of kind of like, all right, how am I going to get laid in this scene? Like, how is that going to happen? Like, and it basically happens throughout this entire movie. And it's just, it's just kind of nuts. That's why I kind of thought more Austin Powers than James Bond in this movie. And it's just a lot of weird situations that go through on that. Like, he gets out of things in this movie. And it's just really strange how they happen. Like, the alleyway thing with Jaws, where a group of people was kind of just like pushing away. And I'm like, wait, what is this?
And that scene is crazy because he has Dr. Goodhead and he's apparently a vampire because he's about to bite her neck.
Why is that happening?
Yes. And then he sees the crowd and goes, oh shit. And he picks her up and she doesn't scream for help or anything. Yet, she just pretends she's having a good time.
He's taken away in the crowd and he's just like trying to get back and they walk away so calmly like, oh yeah, Jaws is done.
This is fine. Yeah, you know,
it's okay. Nothing to see here. Keep moving. And but back for Bond though, like that's kind of what I got from, like, this wasn't James Bond to me. This was more Austin Powers than James Bond. So
yeah,
that's kind of the vibes that I got from it. And we'll get to his Q Branch stuff because I have some issues with Q Branch in this
movie. Yeah, okay. Well, we're coming to Q Branch is next.
So weird.
So I think, you know what? And Ginny, I'm gonna ask you to go in a second, but something you had said, Ed, that it was too Austin Powers. And then something you had said before, John, about how this is a movie that is almost reflecting, it's like a parody of itself, right? Like, for the genre. And I guess it comes down to, as I said, what you're looking for in these James Bond movies, right? Like, how much you're going to like it. Do you want the Austin Powers feel or do you want the Daniel Craig feel, right? So that was just something to point out. Ginny, what did you think about the James Bond in this?
I'll tie Bond into the ladies because I think I noticed maybe the way he's got a couple of like female agents that he interacts with or just like henchwomen. And it's like just I don't know. He's not totally forcing himself on ladies as much as he is other movies. I get that to me. I'm like clearly seeing that. I think it's true, and I think
that's a victory.
Yeah. It's all very consensual, and even when the girl's like, "You kissed me, and I didn't ask you to," it's very playful. It's very like, you know, they're in control, both equal parties. And Dr. Holly Goodhead, who is like, I don't know that name again. The name is
terrible name
for a character who is like so grounded and is like, I am a doctor of and I am better at this than you are, Bond, and I am like trained for this, and you're not. And I'm like, what happened? And she's, you know, Lois Childs, and she's it's a sex pun name.
Is it a pun though, Ginny? Is it?
No,
Dr. Goodhead.
No.
I mean, she might as well be called, like, you know, PhD blowjob. Professor
blowjob. Blowjob to you. I've had to put up with this a lot in my field.
It's blowjob.
I feel like her face reads to me a lot of, like, I put up with a lot of bullshit. That's like the subtext of her face, which I love. And then, and she's also very, like, even more than Triple X, maybe from the last movie. Agent XXX in the last movie. I don't remember her like full on combat as much as Baby Girl is, as much as Holly Goodhead is. She's like, Holly Goodhead is like punching you in the face. Like, she's like, I won't even try to like seduce you. Use my womanly wiles. She's like, what are we doing? We're going to get into the space. Right. And then like smile at you and then like walks over and then just punches you. There's no like show to it. And she, like, her and Bond are really like equal combats. Which I maybe might be another precursor to later movies where we have like equal, like, you know, Michelle Yeoh's and Pierce Brosnan's like going hard at it. But that's kind of fascinating to me. And again, I know Roger Moore is not my favorite. It's only going to get worse because unfortunately he's going to get a little older and it's not going to be as charming anymore.
No,
so when, this might be the last
when we
round.
Get to a View to a Kill. He's like a grandfather. Like, he's hitting on women in that I'm like, oh, Gramps, no.
What did I say? That's about it for me. I think, I think she's kind of brilliant. All right, like, so what?
So, all right. So did you ultimately, since you brought up the Bond girls, let's talk about the Bond girls a bit. So ultimately you like Dr. Goodhead.
I do, but she's not my favorite still, which is okay. Weird. Cause she, it's just, yeah, I just, yeah, I like, I do love the scene where they're in, he gets into her room and I love it when she's all in her white little nightgown and he's in black, like just black on black. Cause I love my Bonds and like they're off, you know. Their casual attires and they're doing the weapon gags or he's like, I know what you're up to. And he's like kind of going through her stuff. And I think that was just kind of a fun bit.
That was pretty fun. Ed, what did you think about Dr. Goodhead as a Bond girl?
She was actually cool. Just that her name is, it's very obviously difficult to take her seriously after that pun. No, she holds her own in a lot of it. I mean, the same truth, like Jenny was saying, like she actually is like punching people and things like that. She's actually holding up her end of the bargain. And it's still, I mean, it's not as much as we saw like Halle Berry later on or Michelle Yeoh or anything like that. But for its time, I mean, I guess this is what you could say is kind of the equivalent of that, is that she's not just a damsel in distress that's over there or just needs Bond's help or saving all the time. This is seeing that they're in an ambulance together with this random guy, and it kind of looks like they're trying to seduce the guy, and that's how they get out of it. Like, hey, want to go hang out with us somewhere? And like, I'm like, what is going on right now?
Oh god!
All right, so I'm glad I'm not the only one that saw that because I was gonna start wondering about myself like after the movie.
No, like this movie's about. This movie's about space orgies. Nothing's off the table.
No, they're just like giving him a look, and he's kind of like, he's like, he's down with it. He's like, oh yeah, and then they just like taken by surprise
because she keeps calling his attention, and he's just, I don't know what's he doing. He's just sitting there looking at something. He's like, oh
yeah. Bond winks too, like, he hey, does. Like what? Did they have this guy like profile? They watched him. They know what he's like into and stuff. And they're like, hey, let me know how to get away. I don't know. Maybe it's an elaborate plan that they had. I don't know.
All right, now Goodhead, this man is very much into threesomes, but two men. It's got to be a devil's triangle.
But one of the other Bond girls, though, that not Goodhead though, but the pilot.
What's her name? Dufour.
Karine Dufour.
Oh gosh. But then she has that scene. Remember that scene? If we're talking about random, but I was kind of alarmed by it, is when they're like, you're fired, Dufour. Yes. And she's like, okay. And then they're like, the villain walks away, and then the henchmen have the dogs, and she just has to run in the woods.
Yeah, that's a creepy scene.
It's insane. And she's like in a white dress. It's like, what A24, I don't know, movie is like. It's so I kind of liked it. I was just also very much like, ooh, I don't like this physically, but I dug it.
It was strange, but I thought that stranger thing than her being eaten by or almost eaten by two dogs is that she has this list she mentions about mother's first date list that she has.
Oh, yeah. And then,
by the way, and then she can't read.
Yeah, she has the worst. She has, in my opinion, really the worst line of the movie and the best line of the movie.
Yeah, so can she, when she learned how to be a pilot, she couldn't read during this?
It was, I mean, I think that's just a way of saying, nah, we're going to get it on. I don't care what mama says.
Pretty much. I never learned to read.
But it's such a stupid
line. It's just a dumb line. Yeah, it's like, a stupid line.
What about your mother's list? I never learned to read. Like,
you're a pilot.
Dumb girl.
Yeah, it made me start raising a lot of questions that are probably totally unnecessary. And then what about her awkward non-kiss, then kiss with him? Because at first she's like, she backs away like, oh my God, what are you doing? And then 2 seconds later, she's down. For no reason, because there's nothing behind. I'm like, what the fuck is this?
Like, a lot of things just happen in this movie.
Yes, everything just kind of happens.
Without really, you know, actions that spurn it. But I'll say this about those two Bond girls. I actually like Dr. Goodhead. I just wish she had a better name. Like, I can't take her as seriously as Agent Triple X just because Agent Triple X has a better name. Huh. And yes, I'm saying someone who says, but because it's Agent Triple X, that at least is clever. Like, yes, it could be a pornographic thing, but it's also, she's a Russian agent. Like, you know,
or Vin Diesel.
This is, or Vin Diesel. This is their designation. Exactly. But this is just like Dr. Blowjob. It's terrible. I can't like, but the character is awesome. I agree with you. Like, the character does more ass kicking than any of the Bond girls in the Roger Moore run. And that's saying a lot because Barbara Bachman kicked ass in the Spy Who Loved Me. And Camille, I'll give her, like, she has the worst line of the movie, but she has what is arguably the best line. And I think this is a terribly written movie. I just think there are so many terrible lines, but this is a really good line when she introduces Drax before we meet him, when she says, what he doesn't own, he doesn't want. So, I mean, I got mixed feelings about her, but because then also she says, I can't read, and gets eaten by dogs because she gave this, like, I don't like,
because
I,
she doesn't use the golf cart that she came in.
Yes, there you go. John, have your say about the Bond girls. I'm sorry.
Not at all. I think you guys have done a great job in terms of talking about like this, because we're still in the Bond movie. We still have some problematic things going on in terms of our modern evolved views of like feminism and what female characters can do within a movie. But just to summarize and like touch upon the points that you've all made, Dr. Goodhead is a great character. It's almost as if she was drawn into this like this plot because she has such a terrible name. You know, her destiny. Yeah, her destiny is formed by the fact that she has a horrible name. You know, because she's more competent than Bond. Let's face it. She knows she can kick as much ass. She could fly a space shuttle. She's a scientist and a spy, and possibly a better spy. So, like, you know, she came to spying late in life and is still like on Bond's level. She's kind of like his equal, which, you know, makes her like a really kind of like good character to like have in this movie, a fun character to like have to watch.
Mm-hmm. All right. Mm-hmm. I agree. All right, we're not, it's not too contentious yet. We're all still friends. Ginny, any other Bond girl related things before?
I mean, there's our I forget her name in Rio. Manuela. I actually liked her too. She was like, I don't know, just she was competent and just kind of like a very maybe random in that she was there and didn't sleep with Bond or get killed, or she was just on her mission. And I kind of liked that though, that she was like, nope, she got the thing out. Okay, she's still alive. All right, she's still there.
I do think it's implied that she does sleep with Bond though.
Oh, did she? Okay.
Well, like there's that scene where they're on the couch and he's like, oh, well, how do you kill 5 hours in Rio?
There we go. Okay, I thought there wasn't time. Yeah. I thought they got interrupted. Okay, you're right. Yeah. But she didn't die. I was like, thank God. Okay. She was gorgeous and she was super fun. And they were in Rio having a great time.
And I say blame it on Rio. Anyone ever see that movie with Michael Caine in it?
No.
I did not.
But John, you've heard of this movie, right?
I have, yes.
And Jenny, have you heard of this movie?
I remember the night and you.
It's Michael Caine and some other guy, and they both like sleep with each other's daughters or something.
Oh my god!
In Rio, and you just blame it on Rio.
Yep. That's it. Roll credits.
That's it. And one of the daughters are famous. I just don't remember who it was.
Blame it on Rio.
But like one of the daughters is actually like someone. I just can't remember who she is, but she's semi-famous. But yeah, blame it on Rio. It's not a funny joke, Jason, if you have to explain it.
Oh, Demi Moore. Is Demi Moore the famous daughter?
Yes, I think it is Demi Moore.
Oh, Demi Moore. Okay.
Oh my gosh. They like Donovan. Oh no.
I own this movie, guys. Because someone had to, because it was $3. I have a problem with owning, like, if I could buy cheap media, like physical media, I will do it. And it was on sale for $3 used, and I'd never seen it. And I went, I want to see it as just because it's ridiculous. I like stupid movies. Renting it will probably be more than $3, therefore I should own it.
You're not wrong.
Right? This makes sense.
All right, Ed, so guide us through the Q branch, because you said you had some feelings about Q branch. So what do we see in this one?
So the wrist dart rocket thingamajig that he has going on?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, fine. It doesn't seem like very slick or sleek or anything like that. It's there. It's useful. I mean, shit, it saves the day at the end.
It does.
Before Drax gets pushed into space like a fucking queen alien, like
whatever. The hell I'm doing. So in cold blood, by the way, this mod could have taken him in and arrested him, could have done anything, and in cold blood, he shoots him out in air, like as you said, like the queen alien.
He was already dying. That's
where my mind went.
He
did. I mean, he's obviously insane with his wacky orgy plan that he's got going on. So a Bond figures the only way to stop the orgy is to kill this man. So okay, you know, that's what happens. Where does this boat come from? In Italy or like in Venice, where they are. Like,
I love that boat. I do love that boat.
But it's never introduced. It kind of just he's in a boat and all of a sudden it's like, oh shit. Let me go ahead. And then they do this like quick little speedway quick thing. And then suddenly it's got gadgets out of nowhere. Where was Q breaking it down for him and doing this whole thing? That never happened. I'm like, he just happened to find this boat or something. I'm like, is there a deleted scene?
He does address the driver directly before getting in. So maybe like the boat was kind of arranged for him.
Fair enough. Oh, no. John, I agree with you. That's what I led me to believe. But we know, we know the deal by now. He's got to go ahead and do the whole rundown. It's like, all right, that's going to be important. That's going to be important. That's not going to be important. All right, that's going to save the day at the end of this. This
I need to hear
nowhere to be found.
At least one. Now pay attention, 007, while they're standing over a vehicle.
and Q was definitely annoyed with him, like in the scene where he shows him the wrist rocket, which I did enjoy that because I always get a kick out of Q being pissed off at Bond. And then they go later on to this, like, I guess MI6 like hideout that they have, and they're all like in, it looks like it's with ponchos and Western hats, and it seems it's a Nazi like good, bad, and the ugly or something.
Yeah. Oh, that's so weird. I don't know what was
going on, and everyone's in it, and then there's monks fighting karate in a room, which is why I kept thinking of Austin Powers again. Like, this is the kind of shit you would see in an Austin Powers movie. So what the hell was that about? And they never address it again. It's like, they look in the room, they see monks fighting, and like, oh no, close that door.
Let's see. It's like, wrong door.
Yeah, like it's so weird. So I don't know. Like, Q is just doesn't work for me in this movie, like at all. The wrist rocket thing, you expect it to be more slick and something like it should have been like a watch, maybe, but it's this huge like device he has on his hand, like, you're not hiding this, dude. 007, you're not fooling anybody with that. Cut the crap out, man. So, yeah, that's where I'm at with it. And I don't know where the 7-Up product placement falls into place in this movie. It's definitely, I don't know if it's in the Q branch or not, but it is everywhere.
Was it?
Yeah, it was.
Ginny, I was going to stop at like a gas station to buy a bottle of 7-Up and start drinking it during these trailers.
Oh, no.
I was in a rush, so Jason knows I did that with some Cheetos when we covered Peacemaker.
Yes, he did.
Flaming Hot Cheetos.
Flaming Hot Cheetos is a must.
The biggest 7-Up thing is when Jaws crashes the cable car into the 7-Up station.
Oh, that's seen. Yeah, that. Yes, yes, I know.
And then inexplicably falls in love? Question mark.
It was like Frankenstein. I mean, you know that's what they were going for.
I don't think it's inexplicable. I think it's pure, and I think he fell in love.
Oh, I have no doubt that that's what happened.
Let's be happy for him. Like, he's finally found him.
Let's celebrate.
And I'm hoping that afterwards they got married, and they had some 7-Up served at the wedding, and they took British Airways to go to their honeymoon, because that's the other one that's, like, smacked in the face in the
right, yeah,
British Airways.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what I got for E branch.
All right. Anyone? I mean, I got nothing. The only thing I got to add is fuck you, movie, for making a pigeon do a double take with bad.
Oh,
editing.
Wow, there it is.
Which happens? Yeah, exactly. No, John, you actually did a double take. This was just a shot of a pigeon turning its head, reversed, and let go. It was so cheap. And for what? For what? What have we gained with a pigeon taking a double take at James Bond riding in a gondola on the streets of Venice, not in the canals? What have we gained that we didn't gain with every other person? The artist and the lovers and the fucking children. Everyone's doing a double take. What did I need? What did we gain to have the pigeon do it? Fuck you, movie.
I was wondering where it was going to come from, and there it is.
Oh, I knew. I knew it was. Because that's at that point this movie loses me. I'm actually okay with this movie flaws and all up until that point. And then it loses me.
So you're saying you'd be okay with the other stuff that happens after that, for, if not for the bird? Or the
No. Like, here's the thing. We're all... I am riding the James Bond Express securely on the track, and then I see a pigeon do a double take, and it jumps the track, and somehow we are riding an undiscovered country with no track, about to blow up at any moment, and I'm just praying I'm going to survive the end. But that wasn't really a Q branch thing. That was more we kind of just went on to it. It happened to coincide. You mentioned the boats and I got triggered. All right, anyone else want to talk about any Q branch related stuff before we get into the villain and the henchman?
I know this is very stupid, very small thing, but like James Bond's spy camera with the lens and the 007 is really cool.
Yes.
I like that. That was cool. I also did like his safe cracker cigarette case.
Yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
I kind of wish we had a proper Q scene setting that up instead of James Bond in a poncho pretending he's in the Outlaw Josie Wales, you know? All right, so let's talk about Jaws in this movie.
Love to. Would love to.
Ginny, start off the Jaws conversation.
I just didn't realize, because I knew that he, like, I knew what we all know is that, like, kind of he came back and he was in space, and that, remember, he like fell in love, but then you're like making that a bad point. And I go, I found him very attractive in this movie, like longer hair, mussed up. I don't know how to, I mean, he was, and he just is kind of like, I think we're all sleeping on that. He was a very good looking guy.
I have never met someone who is dying to live Beauty and the Beast more than you. I'm sorry that your husband Tom is a wonderful man and not in fact a beast. Only for you.
I don't know. I think it's very dashing. I think he got a glow up. I think he had a glow up in this movie where, like, as opposed to oh my gosh, last movie. I don't know. I think he's a little rougher, and he deserves love. He deserves love. And he gives like maybe some of the best acting in the Roger Moore series. Just, I think we all know what I'm talking about at the end when he just has that pathos of just like, oh my God, wait, what? Like he starts to, you know, it's so sad. I'm so upset. And I kind of fell in love with him. I have a lot of notes about Jaws. Oh man. just that. I mean, please talk. I mean, you guys go on. I'm just gonna gush about him and how much I love him. And I think, you know, what a beautiful man, what a beautiful human being.
All right, but Ginny, I have to ask you this question: which do you think he is a better Bond henchman in, this or The Spy Who Loved Me?
Probably Spy Who Loved Me. Okay. Right. Yeah. He's
like genuinely menacing in that movie.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. And then again, I think the one moment scene where he is like in the alleyway with the clown mask on in Rio, that was scary. There's jump scares in this movie.
There's so many
jump scares in this movie. I made a note of it. That was like very scary. And then there's no music and he's struggling with the girl and it's awkward. He's trying to bite her neck. And I'm like, this is very weird. Okay.
And then gets whisked away by a random crowd.
Then gets whisked away.
Yes. It's weird.
Yes. But he's a human in this. And I think he's an ally. He's an ally in this movie.
A human.
Man, you're not going to get me to talk smack about this man. He's so good in this movie. Yeah.
A human who bites through a cable of a cable car with his teeth.
No, that was efficient. That was just
fine.
That's why he has the teeth. I mean, if you're not going to bite through a cable car, what are you doing?
It's not his fault. It's all he knows, Jason. It's all he knows.
All he knows is biting.
All right. So Ginny is on Team Jaws.
I'm Team Jaws.
John, tell us why you're on Team Jaws.
Oh, absolutely, because you know that I am.
Yes, I do.
Here's the thing. We know that Jaws can be menacing. He is ultra strong. He has metal teeth for a reason that we never really become aware of. We need Jaws to be a fully developed character. He is a complex character who is developed as, you know, having a sense of, like, good and bad, right and wrong about him. because we need him to make the crux, the climax of this movie work. Because, like, he needs to turn against Drax in order for all of, like, you know, the victories to happen. You know, like, they can't disable the space station and, you know, have the big, you know, fight where, you know, America wins or whatnot. You know, without Draws realizing his larger humanity that, you know, by participating in this eugenic mission of the space orgy, that he, you know, he would be, like, kind of, you know, not just eliminating himself from humanity, but, like, you know, just kind of, like, eliminating a larger humanity that he is connecting with. So, like, we see Jaws, you know, have romantic interest, turn to love, you know, decide to let Manuela live in that alley instead of fighting through that entire crowd of people because, like, he knows that, like, you know,
spikes. Wow.
No, he lets her live. He lets her live. You're right. Yes, you're totally right, John.
He doesn't let her live because he has a moment of humanity. He lets her live because he knows if he just attacks her in that alley, he's going to freak people out and blow his cover.
And he could not get away from the crowd that was obviously overpowering him. I mean, and took him away.
He's like the Incredible Hulk of strength, you know, in these movies. He easily could have just went back or something. I mean,
yeah. Oh, John, I'm with you 100%. He could have just started tossing them away, like, left and right, like they were like rag dolls if he really wanted to.
Exactly. But instead, he chooses not to. He's kind of like, meh, maybe I'm not a murder machine. Maybe I'm, you know, something else.
Maybe I have some feelings. Yeah.
All right.
Wow.
Ed, I'm gonna, while I try to figure out what movie our co-hosts watched, because I can't tell from what they, because it wasn't the one I did.
You want to talk about Jaws? John, I'm gonna give you a lot of credit on that because you're really bailing out the writers with this. Because I just pretty much was like, nah, he's taken away, he's defeated, super easy, barely an inconvenience. He's taken away by this crowd, and that's pretty much that.
I'm yelling at the writers now. Just wait. I got more.
I know. I'm sure you're ready to go. But yeah, even to the fact that Bond and they know, like, oh yeah, he's done. We don't have to worry about him. Yeah. So Jaws is just a weird character. Just with him, when he's just like the biting through the cable car and his constant smiling at Bond every time he sees him, and they kind of gave me the Peter Griffin fighting the chicken thing where it's kind of picking up where it left off the last time and it keeps going throughout the film. This is the insanity that was going through my head while watching this movie. And they just keep picking up the fight from the last time. I've got Jason. He's done.
Yes, he killed Jason.
And he just... Then there's the Frankenstein moment, which you know what they were going for with the joke there when he meets the girl, and there's that.
Oh, she's the pigtails. That makes sense.
She has the pigtails. I totally was getting a Frankenstein vibe.
I didn't think about that.
It was done playfully, and that's what they were going for, because this movie obviously doesn't take itself seriously on any level at any point. But then Jaws is like face turn, to borrow the wrestling terms. This is what we keep doing on these shows, because Eric and Tim have infected us with their wrestling show, with Just Too Sweet show.
God, I made a Bret Hart reference the other
and show. We talked about a heel turn. We're using terminology from wrestling over here. But yeah, he turns good guy over there, and it's an interesting way though, because as Drax is delivering his speech and talks about like the superior race and all these other stuff, you see these like young, like sleek couples and stuff, like you can tell, like, yeah, space orgy is gonna go down, and then they cut to like Jaws and his woman, and eventually he figures out, oh, wait a second, they're not talking about us, we're gonna get wiped out. Did Jaws think at any point like he was part of this superior race, and him and the girl with the pigtails were gonna get it on and have their kid? Like, really?
I'm actually going to say that I 100% think that that's what was going to happen. Drax wasn't going to kill them when they got into space. If Drax wanted Jaws dead, he would have been like, oh, okay, Jaws, you and Pigtails, you show up at Thursday at 0700. He's an idiot. We're going on Wednesday. Like, he doesn't have to let him on the ship. Like, you're not going to – Hitler's not going to, like – because this is a Hitler allegory. Right. This is,
yes, 100%.
It's Hitler in space. This is what, yes, what Mel Brooks promised us in History of the World Part Two. But Hitler's not going to kill his, you know, his biggest bulldog enforcer just because he doesn't fit the mold. Like, he's just not going to let him breed with everyone else, which, fine, Jaws doesn't want to. Jaws wants to breed with Pigtail. So
Jaws wanted the space orgy. I think that's why he turned, actually.
No, he didn't.
He's like, wait a second. Monogamous. I don't get to get down in the space orgy. Fuck this. Bond, let's go. No, he's wrong.
See, that to me would make more sense because I don't think Drax was setting him up to kill him. And I think, like, I don't know, you guys saying that he had moments of humanity that made him a real character. I think that's insane, guys. I mean, that's a stretch. Like, let's talk about his meet cute where he fell in love, where he crashes after unsuccessfully trying to kill Bond, destroys a 7-Up shop, and then walks out, and then the laziest of lazy things happen. We get like a classical music cue that they're in love and they look at each other and oh, they're in love. Oh, wow. What character growth. They looked at each other and fell in love. My God. Oh, man. Dickens had nothing on these guys.
Well, it was a bad music cue, but it was a pretty hilarious meet cute. He just, he wandered out and he's tall. He's 6'8".
It's a hilarious meet cute. And I have seen hilarious Bugs Bunny cartoons that have better character development than we see of Jaws here. Because what pushes this? So then then he's in love. And then he's still doing evil things. And he's okay with destroying the entire world again, because this is literally the plot of The Spy Who Loved Me, except in space and not the ocean. And he was okay with that part of the plot in The Spy Who Loved Me. He's willing to sacrifice, kill everyone on the planet until he goes, oh, wait, I don't look like everyone else. And then all of a sudden he's willing to go to hell tonight and die to save James Bond. That is terrible writing. That makes no sense to me. I'm sorry.
I think it's because he knew he wasn't going to be involved in the space orgy.
It's the only way that makes sense.
He went there. He was going along with Drax's plan, took the money and everything like that because he thought he was getting into the space orgy. Then he meets the girl, like the random girl, and he kind of starts thinking, maybe should I do the space orgy? Should I not? But if she can participate in it, then I'm down. And then suddenly they were getting thrown out of the space orgy. And then now he's done with them. That's it.
Do you think they're throwing her out of the space orgy? Because she's got the blonde hair, blue eyes thing.
She's pretty cute.
Think they're a package deal in the space orgy.
I think so too.
Like, she doesn't get in with that. Like, yeah, they need each other to get into the orgy.
Okay.
You can't just go in by yourself. It's got to be two people.
That's true. Yeah, that's true.
But here's the thing. I think she fell in love with him, and then I think this made him like really connect with her. Is that he doesn't know what she doesn't know what he does for a living, or that there's going to be a space planet world.
You don't think he told her about the space orgy? Right?
No, I think she likes him on initial looks because he's a handsome looking man. He's 6'8"
with razor sharp teeth.
With razor sharp teeth.
So tell me what you think solidified their undying, everlasting, going to the grave love together. Like, was it just, oh my God, he survived crashing through that 7-Eleven thing? Like, he's really good. Like, I've met lots of good looking women that I didn't wordlessly run off with.
I think he's so special and so unique, and she's probably misunderstood her life and her home life. And I think this is someone who sees into her soul, and you just don't, you know.
Judy, I have one more question. I got one more question, then I will stop.
Judy, I'm going to help you out with this because I got something for you that you set up earlier.
Okay. Oh no.
Judy,
he sang the song to her. That's how
yes, you know he did. You know
he
did.
He sang Moonraker to her. That's how they fell in love.
That's it.
He's that deep voice.
Ginny, here's my question. If you were her in that meet cute, you would have run off with Jaws without wordlessly, wouldn't have you?
Probably.
All right, that makes sense.
Yeah, he wasn't gonna attack me.
And then there is a second henchman in this movie, and I don't remember his name, but he's like the Asian guy who is employed by Drax, who attempts to kill Bond once in the anti-gravity machine. which I had a question there when Dr. Goodhead straps him in. She's like, most people go 3. It can go as high as 20, but that'll kill you. Why can it go as high as 20 if it'll kill you? It's just supposed to get you ready for space. Yeah, but again, that doesn't mean... Anyway.
I'm not saying it makes sense. I'm just trying to throw something out there.
So we have that where this guy is continuously trying to kill Bond until they have a fight, which reminded me so much of the Pink Panther fight with Clouseau, with his like judo master who would jump in at a note like it, that. I swear to God, I thought I was watching the Pink Panther. And then James Bond throws him out a freaking window and he falls headfirst into a piano. And Bond, so cold blooded, just like, I don't, like, he hit the wrong note or something. He makes a bad joke. Like, I don't know what was going on here.
I think that's exactly what was going on here. Total Pink Panther vibes here.
What is there to say? There's going to be fight scenes in like any Bond film. You're in a factory full of glass, and they're breaking glass. You know, Chang has the kendo stick. It's
the factory's trying to kill him with a kendo stick or something else.
Yes, yeah. And then Bond cuts it with a sword. And like, yeah, that's exactly what you want to see. Like, you know, he's hurting Bond with a stick, but then, bam, a sharp object.
Okay. Ginny, any thoughts on this guy?
No.
All of your research was into Jaws.
It's really a lot of Jaws news here. So,
Ginny was literally like, there was a second henchman? What? By the way, we did not talk about, and I cannot let this go, but just to get back to Jaws real quick, Jaws flying on the air, like going through the security in the airport. Yes,
I'm into that. This is not necessary at all. I don't want to see him go through customs, but
it actually kind of made me think, like, what would it be like if he tried to fly today? Like, you can't pull that shit in a TSA agent. Like, I got metal teeth. They'll taser you.
They should have so many questions. So many questions.
All right, so then I guess that leaves us Drax, whose big plan literally is, as we said, so this is the plot, and I'm gonna point out plot holes, and then like please fill them in, because I admit halfway through this movie I was just like, why am I watching this? So like after the pigeon, it lost me again. So Drax's plan is he is the person who makes these Moonraker spaceships. He has made 5 of them. 4 for himself, 1 for the U.S. government, but then he has to steal that one back because he says he had a fault in one of his other ones. And the Moonrakers only exist so he can get his, like, in the orgy people up to his space station for the space orgy. And then he's going to use a space laser to destroy the world. That's the plot, right? Like, I'm not... Well, did I miss it?
Friggin' laser.
Oh, there's no laser. Okay, it's, all right. Maybe
he's spraying the Earth with chemicals that will eradicate human life, but nothing else.
That's it. You're right. My bad. Yes. So, which is a much more clever twist. So he literally wants to kill everyone and leave everything standing, so I guess they can come back down after their space orgy and repopulate.
Yes. Right, exactly.
That's why they say that. They're going to do that.
Yeah. So it might be better than blowing up the planet or something.
I agree. Smarter move. You want to keep it working. Here's my question: why was Drax the number one suspect? Like, I get it. He was like the villain, and he dresses like a villain, and he speaks like a villain. Like, everyone got the script that says in big bold letters, act as if Drax is the villain in a James Bond movie. And everyone does that, right? But like, there's nothing that really connects him. Like right away, the Moonraker's taken and Bond is sent off to go investigate the guy who built it and sold it. Like, I don't think that would be the first guy you look at. All right, Ed, maybe, no, but please, not, fill
not,
me
not
in. Fill
not
me
exactly,
in.
Though, because if okay. I remember correctly, M sends him there to help the U.S. government to find out what happened. So he's just there to investigate their situation. with the disappearance of the Moonraker. He wasn't investigating Drax to begin with, but then he sees Drax and he's like, obviously, this guy shops at the same place as Blofeld and Dr. No. I've seen those guys. He's obviously a Bond villain. I mean, this neon light sign behind him that says Bond villain here with the arrow pointing down at him. I have to look further into this.
Okay.
So all right. Slightly different.
Slightly different. But I still find it like, then why is Drax trying to kill him? All Drax has to do is like, Bond's going to come and investigate. No one suspects me. I'm going to put away my freaking Dr. No smock and put on a goddamn regular suit. I'm not going to try to kill this guy or say anything suspiciously evil in the 24 hours he's here. And that'll be that. Like, it just, the jump to why he's the villain. Like, I don't know. It just doesn't make sense to me. John.
So here's the thing about this movie. Drax doesn't care whether he's found out. That's the thing. This movie works a lot like an episode of Columbo. Like, the murderer did it.
Columbo comes in the room and is like,
oh, yeah, you're the guy. And then they spend the entire movie kind of, you know, working around each other to the point where they can, like, you know, resolve, like, you know, the murder, you know, kind of solve the problem that's here. You know, Drax never pretends to not have done it, really. You know, he's just kind of like, oh, what are you doing here? Like, you know, as soon as James Bond leaves the room, he's like, oh, yes. Make sure he meets with some accident or something. You know, right away, he's like, I know what's going on. He knows what's going on. You know, I'm not going to just, like, you know, wait for Bond to kind of, like, find, like, all the secret documents. I'm sending Chang after him right away to try to kill him.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, why waste time? Because in, like, 48 hours, I'm going to eliminate the Earth anyway. So, like, you know, I just, you know, I did what I had to do. It doesn't matter to him that he, like, can be, like, indicted for, like, stealing his own spaceship, that he would have eventually been found out. Because, like, you know, on radar, those ships would have been seen going up into, like, the atmosphere by every country with, like, satellites. So, you know, they would have been like, oh, yeah, there's the ship that was lost. You know, for him, it doesn't matter because he's going through with his plan no matter what.
So his confidence in his plan is arrogance.
Yes.
John, I'm with you 100%, actually. That's what I read was his thing. I do find it funny that the second Bond shows up, he pretty much has these absurd attempts that non-stop attempts to kill Bond throughout the entire movie.
Yes.
And they just keep falling flat one after the other. And I think the most ridiculous one is towards the end of the movie, when all the random women, the beautiful women come out.
Yes.
And it's just like, so this is what we're going to do. We're going to get all these women to come out. We know Bond is obviously going to cave immediately because he can't say no, but you guys got to make sure he gets on this one rock. Once he gets on that one rock, he's going to get ejected into this pool, and we're going to send a python. A python is going to kill him. Yes. This is what we're doing.
And then we get to see Bond fight a rubber snake, by the way.
Yes, he does. It was very much like Batman 66 with the fucking shark.
It was. It actually reminded me of that scene in Ed Wood when they have Bela Lugosi wrestling with the animatronic octopus. What? Only the animatronics aren't working, and they're just like, no, Bela, just splash around a bit. It'll be fine. It'll look great. Like, that's what it looked like to me.
Oh, man.
He's stabbing a plastic freaking python.
Wow. The editing of this movie is great. They make that look as good as candy for the 1970s.
Yeah, it's 1979. I don't know. Star Wars existed.
I don't know if it's as good as a movie can look in 1979. Again, yeah, Star Wars was for 1977, and this movie knows that because the whole reason it's set in space was to capitalize off of Star Wars. Yeah. And I'm going to tell you guys the movie we should have gotten when we're done talking about this movie, because I listened to the book, and it is the best of the James Bond books. It is phenomenal.
That's like, why you're so pissed about it.
That is another reason I'm so pissed about it.
Okay.
But before we get to that, let's wrap up this movie. Does anyone we went through all the big things. Everyone got to say what they want to about the big things. Any moments that you wanted to go through your notes and sort of talk about before we wrap up? I'll tell you about the book, and then we'll see if this is a successful mission or not.
My mouth dropped open when we got into space and we're shooting lasers, pure laser beams at spacemen, space henchmen, like guys in, like, you know, space outfits, and murder in space. Just like, and not like, pew, oh, I got shot, like a full on ripped through, I'm assuming, the suit, and they're just gone to the darkness. And that was pretty insane. I genuinely gasped because we went hard. We were like no space for so long throughout the movie. And then when we got like space that last half hour, and then we were going to go crazy with that battle sequence.
Ed, do you want to go first?
Sure. I agree with you, Jenny. Like, that's where the pigeon double take is, when the movie starts going to another level. And then it starts, then is like the boat with the whole Venice thing. And everything. I think that was all actually the same scene. And that's when I felt like I was doing the double take as well. And then the movie just completely jumps off the rails, keeps going. And what do they usually do with franchises when things are, you're pretty much out of it? You go to space. But this is what it was. You kind of just like, fuck it, Bond in space. Let's go. Like, Jason loves, listen, what do we do with Jason Voorhees? I wonder. All right, listen, space. Boom, but let's get him up there.
But that's a great movie, my friend.
Listen, we're going to save that. We're going to save that for when we get to other franchises. Because me, you, and Ginny have had a whole separate show offline about horror movies.
That's true, yeah. That is very
organically
true.
Out of nowhere. Yeah, it seems like that's what you kind of do. And this franchise was just like, fuck it, let's go. Star Wars is a big thing. What do we do with Bond to keep him relevant? Space. Let's go. Get him up there. And the last thing is just, like space lasers and stuff. And I'm like, what happened? The orgy's over. Is the orgy not going? We're canning the orgy. Now we're shooting lasers at people. What is going on here? And yeah, that's where I was just totally just shot and just amazed by this movie.
Okay. John? Yeah. So we've talked a lot about like the things that we feel are kind of missing from this film. You know, we want explanations of this or missing the story of that. For me, like, these choices feel kind of intentional, you know, out of a self-awareness of kind of the Bond/Spies franchise. A lot of our reading of this film depends upon our already existing cultural context of the spy franchise, of our knowledge of Bond. The fact that Bond continues to operate throughout this film upon that knowledge too ties into a larger kind of like absurdism of Bond within this film. We're, you know, by watching Moonraker, we're like, you know, we're engaging in this kind of like, you know, this plot that, you know, defies explanation, intentionally does not give us explanation because it wants us to alienate ourselves, you know, a la Bertolt Brecht, you know, from the character of Bond. We're asked to kind of be more aware of Bond by engaging in this episodic plot of Moonraker. We're not given a narrative. We're given multiple episodes of Bond, any which of which could be plucked out and used to explain this movie. You know, we're actually engaging in, like, you know, a sort of like postmodern take of Bond that isn't entirely successful, I grant you, but is very different than the kind of films that we've seen before. So, Moonraker on that.
Woo!
All right. This is, all right. Well, you know what? I don't have any notes that I didn't get to talk about. And there's really nothing I can say that's going to to top that, John. Fantastically put. All right. I'm going to briefly tell you guys that what this book was about, because this book was so good. So Drax is a character in the book, right? And he is developing a Moonraker, but the Moonraker has nothing to do with space. It's a missile that goes so fast that it renders radar obsolete until it's too late. Right. And he is he's a wealthy noble Englishman who's being paid very well by the English government to create this. And the only reason Bond gets involved at all is because he is he's part of M's like supper club, like his gentleman's club. And the guy who runs it is pretty sure he's been cheating at cards. And it's weird because he's a billionaire. He's a millionaire. He doesn't need to. And so Bond, who is in the book specifically known, like the whole reason Casino Royale happens is because he's specifically known for being a very good and a fantastic gambler, gets like all hopped up on like Adderall or whatever it was called at that time. Like, but like he gets hopped up on speed and like has a really tense game where he kind of fucks up and like gets caught up in the moment and raises too much. And doesn't know if he could pull it off. And like, but he also has this moment where he cheats in a way that the only way Drax would know is because Drax himself cheated. So it's kind of like this really tense, like, checkmate. And then someone in Drax's plant gets killed. And it was like the liaison to the British government. So M goes, you know what? We both think there's something off. I'm just going to send you down there because it's too big of a coincidence. And what it is Drax is a Nazi. He's not actually British. It's one of it's like Alex Trevelyan with the Cossack thing, where like he is part English, but like on his mother's side, but on his father's side, he's German. And he like pretty much came to England after World War II ended and reinvented himself. And he's very smart and he used intelligence to build a fortune. And what he's doing is he's selling the secrets to the Moonraker and the Moonraker itself to the KGB, who are going to get him out of there. And as a final fuck you to London, on the day they're testing it, he's actually wired it with a nuclear warhead, and he's sending it to Buckingham Palace. And that's the stakes that Bond is like. So Bond is like trying to avoid that. Which I mean, I think it's super cool. And talk about a progressive Bond girl. Bond is like hitting on, it's not Dr. Goodhead. She has a regular name, so I don't remember what it is. But Bond is hitting on her the whole time. She's also undercover as Drax's assistant. And Bond is like hitting on her, flirting with her, putting the moves, and she's rebuffing. We got a mission. There's a moment where they think they're going to die and they kind of hold each other, but that's as like most intimate as it gets. And at the end, Bond is like, I'm going to go off with this woman. I think we have a real connection. And she's like, I'm sorry, but I'm super married.
Oh, no.
And she goes off. And he's like, yeah, I guess the signs were there. I got to go off. And like, so it's a completely different thing. And it's such a good story that having just listened to that a couple weeks ago and then seeing this and like, come on, guys. You would have, even if you liked this movie, wouldn't you have much rather have seen that version of it?
Yeah. Honestly, I'd be interested in that for sure. I can understand why at this point in time they made changes to that, because so much of like the appeal of Bond is dependent on certain things like, you know, Bond's sexuality, like, you know, the fantasy of Bond's sexuality and like the international intrigue. This is a very domestic story to like England.
Yeah.
But I like a lot of the tensions that you're bringing up for sure. I would definitely like love for them to kind of like do this with whoever comes after Daniel Craig.
Me too. That's what I hope the next run is. I hope the next run is just movies that they didn't really, that they kind of just made up and didn't adapt. Let's adapt them straight. All right. So let's go around. I'm going to start us off because I think we all know this is, I did not find this to be a successful mission in the Roger Moore run. I'm going to say that I this is the first non-successful one because I have liked the other three that we have gone into the Roger Moore franchise, but I'm going to have to say this is a big old failure in my book. Let's go Ed, Ginny, John. We'll go because I think that's the progression that we'll crescendo into that. So Ed, go ahead.
So I know you were worried that I was going to actually come on here and defend this movie. You seem like you were getting extreme. Ginny knows what I'm talking about. And are they like, because I really was geared up to despise this movie and to hate it. It didn't make me angry. It didn't make me fuck you movie or anything. I don't think it's good, like, at all. I think it's bad. I don't see myself. I own the box set. I'm not going to go back and watch this probably ever again. But, I mean, I didn't hate more in it. It's a goofy movie. It's silly. It's dumb. It is what it is. So I'm going to say it's a failure, but I don't hate it. I didn't despise it. I didn't, like... I don't know. There's a lot of movies we've watched recently for various podcasts that I can say I hated much more than this. I did. I'll be honest. We've also covered some shit. So
hey, you put a gun to my head and you tell me that I need to watch Moonraker or The Amazing Spider-Man 2 again, and I am I'm like, where are you?
Exactly. Exactly. I mean, even for this one itself, I mean, not to just keep beating on it, but that fucking other Casino Royale, like, I've watched this is Skyfall compared to that.
Oh, right.
Put it that way. That's how much I hate that movie. Right? And no, I'm not talking about the Daniel Craig one. I'm talking about the other one.
I was gonna say, are you talking about the 50s one or you're talking about the 60s one, right?
Yes,
the comedy.
Yes, the comedy. The 50s one was much better. Yes, it was much better than that. Yeah, I don't know. And I guess I'm trying to think if I should put this ahead of World Is Not Enough. That's a tough one. I don't know. Might have to hold that for a future episode because I gotta ponder that. But no, it was like, again, failed mission, but not the worst thing I've seen.
All right. Ginny?
So crazy. I think this movie isn't as offensive as the first two in a series, Man with the Golden Gun or Live and Let Die.
Live and Let Die is pretty offensive.
Yeah. It is. We all love it. I know. But oh boy. And I think I tell everybody, watch it. Everyone should watch it. Because I was like, I don't think I had watched this enough when I would be on TV. I'd watch like parts of it. Because I think there's so much, there's a lot of travel, a lot of international travel. Part of me wants to say it's a failure, but I still say everyone should watch it. I think this is I think I'm prone to say I'll watch this every year for me. I know. Okay. I think I want to add this to my list because I watch Roger Moore movies. I don't know. So we'll see. But I was like, because I haven't watched it enough, but I was like, I'll rewatch this. Jaws, maybe it's Jaws.
Yeah.
Oh, it's definitely Jaws for you.
Judy watches like a half an hour of this movie. It's all the Jaws scenes cut together.
She
superimposes herself on the girl with the pigtails.
She just puts pigtails for her and pigtails.
That's it.
Yes.
I'm like, all right.
Oh, excellent. Thank you, Judy. John, why do you say yes?
Yes, and thank you for that. I know that this is not Roger Moore's best film. Like, I think we can all agree on that. But it, one, has a really strong female protagonist. Two, it tries to get Bond into the modern era, where so much of Bond is, like, caught up in, like, missiles and money and things. Like, thinking forward to, like, space and other technology, like, kind of, like, pushes the franchise forward for better or for worse. And three, it gave me a chance to like claim that there was an episodic plot to this movie, which I know kind of like we're showing a little bit recently. But I think it is true in this case, but though not intentionally. I think there are a lot less worse Bond movies out there, so I'm going to say this is a success.
All right. So we got a hate... A not a success, but don't hate. A marginal not success, but you think people should watch it. And a success. So I think overall, better than I thought it would be. All right. So thank you guys for joining us today. Next week, we're going to be doing the Roger Moore. This is the one I forget the most for Your Eyes Only.
Oh.
Like, every time I badmouth Roger Moore, I have very specific Roger Moore movies in mind, and I don't ever remember this one. So I'm kind of excited to relook at it. Fun fact, this is the last movie until Daniel Craig's Casino Royale that is based on an Ian Fleming novel. Because For Your Eyes Only is based on an amalgamation of two short stories, which I'm in the process of listening to. And then Octopussy is a short story itself. And so was A View to a Kill. So still stuff by Ian Fleming, but short stories. So it'll be interesting to see how they sort of deal with the, or if they even bothered. Like if they're just, because this, they really just took the name. So we'll see if it syncs up to the stories at all. All right, but so that'll do it for us. Join us next week for Your Eyes Only at 8:30, as always on Mondays. John, thank you very much for joining us. Appreciate your input.
Hey, John, nice job.
Yeah.
Nice job tonight.
Yeah. My pleasure, guys. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I'd definitely love to have you on again. Maybe for a movie we can agree on. but let's say you're listening right now and you don't like James Bond, in which case I don't know why the hell you've gotten to an hour and 34 minutes, but let's say that's the case. But you like Star Wars, then maybe you should check out other shows on this wonderful network that we're on, Shooting the Sith with our good friend Tim. If you like The Wrestling, you got Just Too Sweet with Eric and Tim as well, which they're the reason we keep making these Damn wrestling. I haven't seen wrestling in years. You know what I found myself looking up the other day? I found myself looking up the like footage of when Owen Hart passed away. Like, not that I wanted to see it. No. I didn't want to see it. I wasn't looking for that. I fell down a YouTube rabbit hole of like lost footage. And I really was like, I wanted to see how like the audience had reacted and how like the people who like Jim Ross was dealing with it, because they had to sort of deal with it in real time. And this is a friend of theirs. And I was just curious how they dealt with it perfectly. But I blame all of this on Eric and Tim for infecting me with their wrestling. but let's say you like getting your knuckles bruised, and join our friend, good friend of the show, Rick, and Old Dirty Fight Pod. If you like the Mets, you could join Farachi with Put It in the Books. But if you don't like the Mets, Ed, who can you join, and what can you listen to if you want Yankee baseball?
You can check out the Empire 161 show with myself and Lisa Garcia. We're usually on Sunday nights or late afternoon. So, yeah, you go ahead and check it out. We got a new episode up that we just recorded yesterday, and we'll be back next Sunday at around 6, 7 o'clock with the latest episode. So, recapping a week in Yankees baseball.
Awesome. And I almost forgot this one. I'm sorry, because it's a newer edition. But don't forget Skyliner Views, which talks about everything Disney. I know they were talking about nostalgia last time. I like to see what they do. I don't have time to listen to anything because I watch so much stuff for these podcasts. But I am curious to hear, because I kind of do love Disney World. I hate to admit it. But let's say you don't want to hear about any of that, and you just want to hear the dulcet tones of myself and Ed. You could join us on Granny's Peach Tea, which comes out. Ed, when is it coming out? Because we actually are not this Wednesday. We have to take a brief hiatus from this Wednesday. So what's going on, and when are we shooting?
So we are going to be back Sunday. So I'll be pulling a doubleheader Sunday night, and then still trying to make Double O Deep Dive the next day. So we'll see how that goes. But we will be talking about Nicolas Cage in Ghost Rider is what we're covering this Sunday night. So, wow, John is pumped up for this.
You know that I love Nick Cage. You know that I do, Jason.
All right. That's well, we actually were inspired true. By his new movie coming out. The I totally am.
Totally. Look at my shirt. Can you see this?
Nice. Yes.
Oh,
wow.
No.
It's a brilliant shirt. My brother got it for me for Christmas. It's perfect for me.
That's awesome. So then, John, you should go ahead and join us Sunday night. And we'll be covering Ghost Riders, our movie of the week. We'll be talking about episode 4 of Moon Knight, which drops in Disney Plus this Wednesday. And we have one episode of The Flash to talk about. I thought it was going to be two, but it turns out to be one. Jason, you're off the hook with it.
All right, and I watched it today, so all I gotta do is watch some Ghost Rider.
Yeah, so go ahead and check that out, and we'll discuss if Jason liked Ghost Rider more than Moonraker. We will find out.
I
think I will, because Nick Cage. I'm excited when we get to Ghost Rider: Spirit of Vengeance, because I've personally never seen that movie. You're on mute, Ginny. What was that?
Oh, I haven't either, actually. Tom's always like, you wouldn't want to watch that movie? I was like, I don't know.
I hear it's some crazy, some great crazy Nick Cage moments in that movie, but that's in 2 weeks. So
yeah, we got a little time to get to that, but yeah, we'll be talking Nick Cage for 2 weeks.
Little Nick Cage for 2 weeks. I'm excited. And Ginny, I apologize. We're gonna go Swamp Thing, but we had to put that off. So we're gonna get you on Swamp Thing. I promise.
All right. I'm ready. I'm ready. I'll rewatch all of it.
Beauty and the Beast theme will come back. I promise.
She's a beautiful plot, man. Come on.
But let's say you like none of that. Let's say you think everything I said was garbage, and you want something a bit more. I just keep getting meaner and meaner about this. By the way, I don't know why.
Why do you hate us so much? Why do you love me?
Why have you listened to me for almost 2 hours and you hate us? But let's say you want something that covers a more broader range of things. Everything, let's say, from aircraft carrier to Zebek.
Wow.
You like that?
Hold on.
I hate it. You see, last week, Ginny called me out because she said that my A to Z was a bit flat. It wasn't as spicy And so I did.
Acceptable?
I don't even know what Zabat is. So good job.
Zabat, it's an old timey type of boat. It's the boat they used in Moby Dick.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. See, that's what my master's gets me, guys. I can make literary references no one cares about. All right. But thank you so much for joining us. And I'm going to leave you with a little disco bond. Because that's right, Ed. I wasn't going to let this episode go without Moonraker Disco, which I actually really like this one. So, all right. See you guys next week. Thank you.
And never forget.